So I'm inviting all who are here to please just allow yourselves to be in a comfortable position. And allow each breath to enter easily into your body. As we perceive, even through closed eyes, perhaps, the beautiful rays of spring sunlight, we're reminded of the constant energy flowing into us and flowing through us. This energy which goes by so many names, in so many languages, which we may call spirit or God. We feel this presence washing over us as if we are being cleansed and baptized. Whatever we may have brought from our history, let this energy flow through us and take all that has troubled us away, so that we may be present in this moment. Breath by breath, we feel the purity of that energy embracing us, holding us. Being us. So we will just take some number of deep cleansing breaths together, allowing that beautiful, pure, spiritual light to illumine us without and within.
I'm going down to the river to pray, studying about that good old way. And who shall wear the starry crown? Good Lord, show us the way. Come on, brothers, let's go down. Come on down, let's go down. Come on, sisters, let's go down, down to the river to pray. Down to the river to pray. I'm going down to the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, O Lord, show us the way. Come on, brothers, let's go down, come on down, let's go down. Come on, sisters, let's go down, down to the river to pray. Down to the river to pray. Down to the river to pray.
I have to do this sometimes with Sal. I say something and then she's like, what? And I have to make a big J in the air. That was a J. That was a joke. The fact that the daily word was about forgiveness. My talk is all about forgiveness. I wasn't supposed to be talking here today. Originally, I was scheduled on a different day. I didn't know I would talk about this until a week ago. I never looked at the daily word. Get chills, right? There is a story about Jesus being approached privately one night by a fellow named Nicodemus. This guy, we'll call him Nick. I think that's what his friends called him, I'm sure. Nick was a Pharisee. It's an important person. And a member of the Sanhedrin. It's like being in Congress, but they had a higher approval rating. He was a high roller and an important dude. And it seems like he was seeking some kind of advice or counsel or validation even. Yeah, he was coming for therapy from this ragtag homeless, wandering teacher, Yeshua, Jesus. No wonder he came at night. It could have really damaged his reputation to be seen seeking some input from what? A hobo. A penniless, itinerant teacher who hung with prostitutes and even worse, tax collectors. So he came in the evening. This was the origin of Nick at Night. That's such a dad joke. Well, old Nick said to Jesus, I know you are the real deal and God is with you, even though I have to sneak out to hang with you under the cover of darkness. And Jesus said to him, get this, you can't really understand and have access to what I am teaching unless you are born all over again. You've been born once of the flesh, but now, if you want to pick up what I'm putting down, you have to be born of the Spirit. You have to be reborn in a spiritual way to hear the message, to get the goods, to be transformed. I was thinking of this passage and this idea of being born again as we got ready to be with all of you this week, because it seems like this whole part of our great Mother Earth is in that rebirth phase. Once again, the nettles are up. Do you eat stinging nettles? They're very good for you, but cook them first. I made that mistake. The salmon berries are blossoming. I saw our first blossoms on the 15th. The frogs are singing. At this time of the year on our part of the beautiful green globe, when we get a new idea, when we feel moved to make a change in our hearts, in our meditations, in our actions, it feels like all of creation is moving with us, and we're being supported and loved by all the verdant energies of another vibrant spring. I don't know if it was spring when Nicodemus came to Jesus, but whether it was or wasn't, I believe that right now in this spring season, we are especially given entrance to a deeply spiritual process, one where we may open ourselves to Spirit, saying to God, work your will. You are the potter, I am the clay. I surrender myself to your Spirit. One particular change I want to focus on today is one that I've come to believe is the keystone to real transformation. It is quite simply forgiveness. Now, if you're here today, but you're already a superstar of forgiveness, a forgiveness Olympian, a perfect forgiveness machine, right there, I got one. One who never carries a grudge or holds onto a pet peeve, then you may be excused from the remainder of the talk. But the rest of us really need help with this. We need help because when we do not forgive, it is hard on our minds, it is hard on our hearts, hard on our bodies. And I believe most, if not all of us, it's not particular to Unity of Everett, I would say this to any group of human beings, I think, are more expert at carrying our judgments and grudges, no matter what the cost, than we are at letting go of those things and just being loving. That's not true for Chuck, because he's been practicing for a really long time, but the rest of us. And perhaps it's natural. The ego is designed to protect us, and it thinks this is my mission, to set up that defensive perimeter. Spirituality says otherwise, and even science now is finding evidence to disagree with those who hold on to resentments. For example, forgiveness is linked to improvements in cardiac health, and studies show that when people focus on grudges and grievances, they have increases in heart rate and blood pressure. You've heard it makes my blood boil. Fill in the blank grievance of choice, it's just about true. Here's an interesting one. A study in the Netherlands asked subjects to write down either a situation where they forgave someone or write down a situation where they're still carrying a grudge. Then, surprisingly, the next task assigned to the study subjects was to jump as high as they could 5 times. I'm assuming, by the way, it was not done with members of Unity. These were relatively young people, is what I'm saying. And there were no lawsuits from making elders sprain their knees, ankles, ligaments, etc. Uh-oh. Thanks, good night. I'm just saying, Art, thank you for forgiving me in advance, our demographic. That's all I'm saying. Get this. Those who wrote about forgiveness had an average vertical leap of about a foot, 11.8 inches. Those who wrote about not forgiving, well, their consciousness was presumably not as elevated, and neither were their physical selves. The average height of their jumps was 8.5 inches, 11.8, 8.5, about 30% less. Huh. So the lesson is, if you are going to compete in volleyball, basketball, or the high jump, forgiveness is essential. Today I want to tell 3 stories about forgiveness. Stories that could help us jump higher, you might say. Stories that give us all something to aim for. Stories that have inspired me. Everyone, I'm sure, knows who Dolly Parton is. Dolly is an amazing songwriter, musician, businesswoman, but you may not know that she is a champion forgiver. In 1967, Dolly Parton began an upward climb in the music business when she was invited by Porter Wagoner to become his girl singer. It was definitely a secondary role on his show. He was a big deal. She was an unknown. Over time, of course, Dolly Parton's star rose higher and higher. And when she found her job on the show too restricting, she elected to leave. It was 1974. Dolly Parton had had 4 number one hits over the course of a year from 1973 on. Whereas Porter Wagoner, let's name his big hits from the year 1973-74. Come on, shout them out, people. Yeah. So she was telling Porter at that time, I can stay on your show, but I have to do other things. I need my own producers. I want to do crossover records and so forth. And he wouldn't have it. He had her in this sort of box, my little girl singer. And she broke out of that box. She left the Porter Wagoner show. He sued her for $1 million. As she says, this part chokes me up, you'll get it. As she says, well, I didn't have that kind of money, but she didn't fight it. She paid it off a little at a time. Because even though he was going on interview show after interview show saying she was a horrible person, she was doing that. I've heard some of the clips. She had signed a contract giving him rights to percentages of her work and so forth when she was only 21 and didn't know any better. And rather than get a lawyer and fight it, she chose to honor that. Fast forward to 1981. Porter Wagner was in real financial hardship. He spent that $1 million and then some. The IRS was coming after him for $500,000 that he did not have. Dolly Parton said in an interview, "Well, I felt bad for him. And who knows if I would have been a success if he hadn't hired me in 67. I had money then." Porter had a publishing company for songs he had written, and I bought the publishing company from him for more money than he needed to settle his debts. Then I gave it back to him. So his kids could have it when he was gone. She goes on to say, "I mean, how can you ever thank somebody for giving you a chance? I felt like it was the least I could do." This is not just forgiveness. This is forgiveness in action on steroids. Throw in some silicone, maybe. Sorry, overshare. Too much. Too far, too much. Okay. When Dolly was asked about this, "How could you commit such an act of forgiveness?" she said, "Forgiveness? Forgiveness is all there is. It goes on." When Porter Wagner was dying in October 2007, who was with him when he was in hospice? His family and Dolly Parton. At one point, she asked if the family would leave so she and Porter could just be alone. And I just talked to him myself. I just told him that I loved him and I appreciated him. And I was so sorry for all the things we'd been through. And I would always remember and treasure him. To give that kind of love over and over. Our second story is from 2006. The details of this tale are so sad that I will sketch it in only the briefest way. It concerns, as so many tragedies we have faced do, a young man who took the lives of others in a mass shooting. This one in an Amish schoolhouse in Pennsylvania. Some will remember this. There is nothing redeeming about the first part of this story. It is a horror, pure and simple. But here's the forgiveness part. On the very day of the shooting, a grandfather of one of the victims was heard admonishing younger relatives not to hate the killer. He said, "We must not think evil of this man." Another community member spoke out saying, "I don't think there's anybody here that wants to do anything but forgive. And not only reach out to those who have suffered a loss in that way, but to reach out to the family of the man who committed these acts." And indeed, an Amish neighbor quickly contacted the man's wife and children, extending forgiveness. Another member of the Amish community held the shooter's father in his arms, reportedly for an hour, comforting him. This is all in the context in which school children had died, Several were hospitalized, and families were scrambling to cope with this tragedy. In those circumstances, and on the very day of the atrocities, members of the community were reaching out with forgiveness to the perpetrator and his family. A leading scholar of the Amish, Donald Krehbill, has noted that this kind of forgiveness is a deeply rooted value in the Amish culture, that they look at forgiveness always as the first step toward a more hopeful future. Can you imagine? Are we all not putting ourselves in the position of the people who have been subject to this violence and imagining if we could extend that forgiveness? It puts our feelings about tailgaters into perspective, doesn't it? Psychologists who analyze the forgiveness process say there are two basic types of forgiveness: decisional forgiveness and emotional forgiveness. In decisional forgiveness, I make a decision to forgive you for taking the last cookie from the cookie jar or whatever horrible act you've committed. I probably don't really feel loving towards you. I wanted that dang cookie. I probably still have a grudge. My heart is probably still hardened. But I've decided on the path of forgiveness. Emotional forgiveness is achieved when I am no longer holding on to my resentment or grievance. My feelings to you, at the least, are no longer negative, or at least neutral over time. I may truly experience empathy, compassion, and love for you. There is no button I can push, no pill I can take, no treatment I can pursue to guarantee my transition from decisional to emotional forgiveness. As lovely as it may be to be at complete peace and love everyone all the time, I may not get there. Lincoln famously said, "You can fool all of the people some of the time and some of the people all of the time, but you cannot fool all of the people all the time." I think his quote could be adapted to recognizing that I may be able to deeply and emotionally forgive everyone some of the time and some people all of the time, but I probably will still carry around a few embers of grudge fire in my heart on a deep emotional level that keeps me from forgiving everyone all the time. Still, that seems to be our mission. Jesus was asked, "How many times do I forgive my brother?" "About 7 times, and then I'm good to carry that grudge, go forward?" He said, "No, 70 times 7. I do not think that means you keep careful track. And when you get to 491 times, you let them have it. That's what he said. They literally, I think the math doesn't translate. It's more of the attitude. Now, I've told you 2 stories of forgiveness. I said I had 3. Well, I sort of lied about that. Please forgive me. Because the 3rd story of forgiveness is not one I'm going to tell. It's the one we get to write every day of our lives. It's the choose your own adventure ending of our daily stories. How we can end these stories either in grievance or in forgiveness, and we get to decide. For people who spend a lot of time with me, family, close friends, I provide them with so many opportunities for forgiveness. No. You're welcome. because I am not all that user-friendly. I'm moody. I'm mercurial. I'm unpredictable. So I give that gift to those who are close to me every day. And this opens the door to one more aspect of forgiveness, which is that I find I can only do better not if I punish or condemn myself for my shortcomings, but if I forgive myself as well. I'm not going to overlook the problems I've caused, and I'm not going to give up and never have any aspiration to improve. But I'm going to work on self-forgiveness as a part of the forgiveness I need to extend to others as well. We could go almost as far as quoting that Bible passage, "For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." That language feels too condemning and evangelical for me. I turn instead to other words of the same writer, the Apostle Paul, who wrote this as well. "I do not understand what I do, for what I want to do, I do not do, but what I hate, I do." I mean, I know he was a Gentile, but he sounds like Woody Allen right there. I think Paul was on to something there. And that those of us who look at forgiveness of self or of others do well to remember that gap between our ideals and our actions, and the fact that that opening is pretty much universal. I believe our best chance to find true emotional forgiveness is to simply open ourselves through prayer, meditation, dedication to the grace of spirit. I cannot, as a boundaried and defensive ego, come to the forgiveness of everyone, because at a core level, my mission is protecting myself. When I identify with that ego, I'm not going to forgive. I'm going to get armored up. It's grace that takes me to that expansive place where I no longer feel like I have to fight for what I need. I no longer have to put you down to bring myself up, where I'm no longer competing with you, but simply loving who you are. I've felt that grace once or twice, haven't you? When I feel it, it's as if I've been wearing blinders and a welding mask so that I could only see this tiny dark vision of the world. And then my eyes are open to what's really going on. I gain that universal perspective that so blows away the tininess of my prior point of view that I just laugh at how worked up I was that you took my parking space or my ice cream, or even that you truly hurt me. Because I'm connected to something deeper, purer, more vast and brilliant. I'm no longer in the rat race. I'm no longer in the game. I have love in me that comes from something greater than myself, the peace that passes all understanding. Does it actually need to be an early spring day for me to feel that grace? I don't think so. To borrow language from a recent book by Timothy Egan, A Pilgrimage to Eternity, when I'm focused on the calendar, my perspective is of chronos. Time divided and measured by human reckoning. But grace is a function not of chronos, human time, but of kairos, God's time. And God's time, kairos, allows for the grace of forgiveness at this moment, repeatedly, eternally. Saint Francis, first biographer of Saint Francis, described him as always hopeful, always beginning again, letting go of all that is not God. This is the letting go that makes real forgiveness possible. May we live this moment, and this one, and this next one as well, in the holy instant of grace, of God's love, of true forgiveness, so that with St. Francis, we're not clinging to resentments and grievances we have carried, but rising above them through forgiveness and through love, through letting go of all that is not God. In this way, we are born again and yet again, and everything is new, whether it is spring or any season. Let your heart stay open, even in the pain, even in the rain. You know the sun will shine. Let your heart stay open.